If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Today is Wednesday. It's 2:43 in the afternoon. It's May 13th, 2026, and hi, this is John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals podcast, the podcast for people who care about Chicago and the world. We're joined today by Eric Zorn, publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, the Substack newsletter, Chicago journalist, longtime reporter, and columnist Kate Plies, publisher now of Roseland, Chicago, 1972. That's on Substack. And Steve Bertrand joins us today, our old friend Steve from WGN Radio News, who now is the host of the podcast Steve Bertrand on Books, and he's the proprietor of Steve Bertrand Travel. Hey, Steve, welcome back.
Long-time WGN Radio News person. Thank you.
I think I said long-time friend at WGN Radio. I guess that doesn't make you a newsman. So
just makes him a friend.
Makes me sound like Craig.
What would you rather be, former news journalist at GN Radio or our friend? I don't have time for all of them.
I'd rather be your friend.
There you go. Good answer. Welcome back, by the way.
That's the right answer.
Just brag a little bit, Steve. Where have you been in the last 30 days?
It's not really bragging, but we've been in the last 30 days, Peru, San Francisco for a wedding, Ireland for a wedding, and London for a theater group trip that we got back from on Sunday. So it's been a busy month.
What is with these destination weddings? Yeah. Is that...
I'll tell you.
Yeah. It's funny, Eric, you say that because neither of these really was a destination wedding. The San Francisco couple lives out there, and the Irish couple are cousins of Sharon's who live in Dublin. But they've gone out. We've gone to two of their cousins' weddings where they rent out like this compound with houses and apartments, and where the whole group has it, and it's a 2-day affair. A 3-day affair. There's the welcome party on Friday. There's the wedding on Saturday. And then Sunday they have a cookout where you got nothing to do but enjoy a Guinness until they cook at 6 o'clock at night. So it's exhausting.
Hmm. Now that one is post-wedding?
They have a cookout the day after the wedding. So on Sunday. Yeah. We skipped out of that.
Still, all the way to Ireland. They don't have the courtesy to just go ahead and get married in Chicago for the convenience.
No. They're from Ireland. I know that.
But they could just as easily have their destination wedding be in Chicago as a courtesy to you.
But from there, we jumped to London for a theater trip and saw The Producers and Shadowlands and Six.
I saw Six in London a couple year or two ago. Isn't that the very best show you've ever seen?
I usually try to be kind of a smart aleck with you, John, but I didn't get that show at all.
I loved it.
Coming was Matt Ware. Matt was our guide, and he was your guide.
He's a nice
man. On that trip. Wonderful guy. And he said it's a love it or hate it sort of show. Sincerely, I didn't quite get it, but
wow.
That's okay.
All right. Let's start this week on attraction distraction. Common theme on this show. The reflecting pool in the Capitol is getting painted blue. It's so perfectly emblematic, isn't it? The White House is literally painting over a problem and then lying about the cost. Before we were told this was the president's pool guy. Now we're told Trump doesn't know him. The president has said he is seriously considering making Venezuela our 51st state. Seriously considering. He seemed to fall asleep at another Oval Office presentation this week. We were told that he wasn't sleeping. He said Cuba needs our help and they are next. He didn't say what next meant. Asked if he cares about Americans' financial situation, he said, quote, not even a little bit. He's more worried about Iran and nuclear weapons. In fact, when I was watching Trump work a rope line this week, he was taking all manner of questions and firing off on all manner of answers. He angrily told one reporter this week she was dumb and called Iran's latest peace offer garbage. And I'm not sure how this happens, guys, but I think we would be better informed and the world would be a safer place if the press did not report everything that pops into his little head. You see why I say that, right? There's not any legitimate news value there. Those things almost certainly don't happen.
Who's going to decide what's true and what's not? I mean, I think that's...
Don't answer a question with a question. Do you think that the world would be... All right. Well, there's the answer.
I mean, you know, someone's got to be the decider. I miss him. I miss George. But, you know, someone's got to decide what goes through the filter. And I think when you start doing that, that's a dangerous thing for the media to be involved in.
Okay, but underlying my question is the point that these things aren't genuinely important or true or lasting, and yet markets move and armies shift and the world reacts. Your financials change. Your gut changes because of the things that come out of this man's mouth. I hate to say, don't pay attention to the news, but I don't think this is news. I don't think there's inherent value in what he's saying because it's not even true.
I've got to go along with Steve on this. It's the president who's saying it, so it is news just automatically. And I think the main thing is that if it doesn't get reported, and of course there's some of this insanity going on every single day, so if it doesn't get reported, people will feel that it's being covered up. Even now, I often hear people complaining that they feel that even the most liberal news media is not holding Trump to account. I feel like I read almost nothing but criticism of Trump, but many people feel that there's still not enough and that they are not holding him to account. So I can only imagine how people would feel. And I think it's important. How they would feel if they knew he was saying crazy things like Cuba is next, but nobody reported it. People would feel that they were being lied to.
And also, you don't know what he's going to do, what he's going to follow through on, or what he isn't. And it's possible. I mean, he attacked Venezuela in the middle of the night. He did try to bomb the crap out of Iran. And who knows if he's going to try to Cuba next, or if he's going to try to make Venezuela a state. I mean, he's not rational enough to know what is actually a distraction, what's an attraction. The reflecting pool is an absurd amount of money to spend to turn the thing looks like a swimming pool or maybe a tidy bowl, toilet bowl, because of the color they got.
It's American flag, but keep going.
But it's not American flag blue, though. It's tidy bulb. So far. But that was unnecessary, and it wasn't important because it's a extremely small fraction of the federal budget. But it's symbolic of his priorities and what he's thinking about. I think that one of the things you mentioned in your litany there, John, about him talking about how he doesn't care about the economic and financial struggles of ordinary Americans during this crisis, was very important. It really told you where he's thinking, that what he is and isn't thinking about, where his priorities are, where they aren't. All these things, I think, need to be reported. I think what is important, though, is for those of us who are in the punditry trade or analysis trade, what we should focus on, what we should really pay attention to. Yeah, Trump falls asleep during meetings. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It does point to a larger question about his overall health.
Or his age.
But
okay.
His age and his health are probably related. But I do think that it's important to report that, because as Kate said, if it turns out that Trump's had a stroke and we are all going, oh, he's just blinking, you wouldn't want that to fall on the head of the media. So it's more a question of what do we focus on versus what we report.
Steve,
I think also you, John, what you might be missing, we're reacting to a series of brushstrokes. Okay, let's go to a Monet exhibit or some other impressionist, and we're up close. We're seeing all these things and consider each of those a brushstroke. When you back up and take all of them together, you have a picture of a pretty irrational leader.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think there's value in reporting it for that reason.
Mel, that's a good point.
I take a little issue. I was watching the president on that rope line, which and when he said he didn't care about the Americans' economy, I think that was what he was really saying, was what I care most about is that Iran will never have a nuclear weapon.
I agree with that, Steve.
And so when he said that about Americans are being impacted by it. That was just a stupid thing to say.
Yes.
That wasn't, it was, took away from
but
his
message. But
that's
it. He says stupid things that aren't true. Or that, I don't think he believed that, Steve. I don't think when he said, I don't care about Americans' economic hardships, not even one little bit, I don't think he believed that. And you don't think he believes that either. You think he does care about the economy and how it is impacting us, right?
Only because of how it's going to impact him. Yeah,
yes,
I do.
Yes,
sure.
Yes.
That's what I mean. That was a misspeak. That was, something that these. And every time I've seen the reflecting pool, I've been a little disappointed by how dumpy it does look.
In general, reflecting pools?
I've seen it pretty scummy. Yeah.
Oh, so. You mean the one in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It totally needs repairs, but it needs $100 million worth of repairs, not $18 million or $13 million worth
of repairs. Have you hired a pool guy lately? Do you know how much they are?
They cost $100 million, yeah. I mean, truly, that's what it needs. They need to rip that thing out and do it all over again. It's like 100 years old, right? But I think this administration likes to brag about how they're the most transparent one, and he's always talking and texting or tweeting. I think all we're doing is then forwarding the lunacy, and that's not all that valuable. It's not substantive. It's not even true. And yet we work ourselves up in it. Oh my God, this guy said crazy stuff or whatever it is. And I think that's a misuse of our time or even the opportunity that the journalists have to cover him. Everything that comes out of his mouth should not be quote-unquote news. I'm making that case. I need you guys to work harder on persuading me otherwise.
Well, I just think that, I don't get worked up about anything he says anymore. And I'm like, oh, really? He did go into Iran? I didn't expect that. Because he says something's going to happen, in fact, I think it makes it less likely to happen. Cuba or Venezuela, the 51st state, that's probably not going to happen. But if it does, it's like, well, I mean, nothing that he does surprises me. But I just think that you can't be the person who decides what is likely to be true and what is not likely to be true.
And that's why I stress the idea of focus. I think everything like this needs to be reported. You can let the Midas touch bang on and on about it if you want. But when you're in a conversation like this one, do we spend a lot of time going, well, what would it involve to get Venezuela to be the 51st state? With the Venezuelan people go on? The barriers to that are so high. And it's kind of like Greenland. Remember Greenland? We were talking about Greenland and Panama. Yeah.
Canada is the 51st state.
It's going to make Canada the 51st. You haven't heard a peep about that. He kind of reassociates.
Okay, so then you're making my case, aren't you here, Eric?
What I'm making your case is let's not get too worked up about things that are probably not going to happen or probably aren't going to cost that much. You pointed out on the radio the other day, we were talking about his face on the passport, right? He's putting his face on some U.S. passport.
Limited edition, if you want it.
And is he going to put his face on a $100 bill or something like that?
Yeah.
His signature. His signature, his signature, right. And just like, okay, this man's narcissism is out of control, but that's not going to affect the price of eggs or gas. But this idea of launching headlong into this invasion of Iran without really realizing what was involved and also recognizing why so many U.S. presidents before him did not do this, even though they know that Iran is a evil state, that there are all kinds of geopolitical reasons not to just go in there and start dropping bombs and hoping you can get a regime change and it'll become Switzerland. That's the kind of thing that's really important to talk about, because this is really, really affecting the price of gas, the price of eggs, and so on.
Can we go back to the impression in museum? Because I think that may well have been the most eloquent and insightful thing I've ever said.
It was a good stroke. No pun intended.
Okay. So, but you get my point then, right?
Yeah.
The idea that rather than get it worked up about each of them, take a look at them all as a whole, and it tells you there's a story there, right? About this president's abilities.
So. But I don't even know that the grand revelation is all that new. And either as journalists or as consumers of news, we do get wrapped up in the individual brushstrokes. And I think it's not healthy.
I think we agree with you on that, John. I don't think anyone's disagreeing with you at all on that.
Yeah.
A lot of pundits certainly will spend way too much time getting into the, you know, absolute weeds on something that's clearly not going to happen, like the Venezuela 51st state thing. I think so. We're not disagreeing with you on let's not have like the New York Times and CNN spend all day on that stuff. Just acknowledge that stuff at least happened. Throw it out there quick, then go on to what's important, I think. So it doesn't look like people are covering it up. I mean, for instance, as much as I detest Donald Trump, I don't actually think he has already instituted a fascist authoritarian government. Would he like to? Probably. I don't think it's already happened. On the other hand, so people who are really out of their minds saying that we are already living in a fascist state, I think they're over the top. On the other hand, it's good to have a few of them out there saying that so that the rest of us continue to be on alert.
Don't you think it's a step forward that he's not painting his face on the reflecting pool floor?
Oh, good point.
A little humility there. That's the new definition of humility.
Well, you know, when I was in Washington recently, I told you that they have banners of him, his face, hanging from like the Department of Labor, the Department of Agriculture.
Massive ones.
Massive ones like I saw in the Soviet Union, or like you would see in North Korea. Right. And that's exactly what they look like. And
it's a good thing he didn't put up a gold statue of himself in the middle of the reflecting pool, you know, with a spout.
Bite your tongue.
Don't give him ideas. Okay.
But I just want to know what else Kate needs for it to her to be more persuaded that we are entering a fascist type government, because a lot of the key elements are there, right? Suppression of the media, denial of the facts. I could go on.
It's attempted suppression of the media. We're all fighting back, and Jimmy Kimmel is back on the air, for instance. I think so far, things are working as they should. Someone tries to suppress someone like Jimmy Kimmel, people fight back, he gets back on the air. The gerrymandering, I wish it wasn't going on, but it is going through the courts appropriately, even if I don't like every decision that comes out of the Supreme Court. It's going to take a lot more.
Yeah,
I mean, call off the elections, and then, yes, I will absolutely be on that.
Yeah, but I mean, really, I mean, and I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think Trump's going to run for a third term. A lot of these things that people do get bent out of shape about.
That's another thing.
I didn't even throw that in the hopper. I didn't even bring up the Trump phones, which people got noticed today may never actually happen. And there's $60 million in deposits for Trump phones. So
I'm just picturing the statue of the president in the middle of the reflecting pool, and the water has got to be spouting out of one end or the other.
Got to come out.
Yeah, I knew somebody was going to bring that up.
We will leave all of that. Although you notice here, so we've spent the first 20 minutes of the podcast talking about the thing that I said, hey, we shouldn't be talking about those damn journalists, silly consumers.
It's not the hantavirus, right?
No, but I mean, really, so the hantavirus, I think that's getting way overcovered. That's another example of a shiny object. That, and what they do is they say, well, here's Donald Trump talking about COVID-19. And then he's, you know, says things that are very similar to what he's saying now. We know what happened with COVID-19. And therefore, people extrapolate, oh, here we go again. Here we don't go again. This is not going to be like that. It's a completely different thing. Kate's looking at me like, don't you dare get this wrong, John.
No, you're right. You're completely right. I know a lot of people who went over the top about it last week. One of my kids, just by complete coincidence, had a really bad sore throat last week, called me up. Oh, I went to urgent care to see if it was, you know, strep throat. It wasn't, and it wasn't COVID, but I felt really, really bad. And my friend said, maybe it's hantavirus. She lives in Brooklyn. I said, honey, don't you think if there was a hantavirus outbreak, however we want to pronounce it, Steve, in New York, you would know? And of course she said, maybe I'm the first one.
Yeah, patient one. Yeah. Somebody's got to be zero.
So maybe it's Ebola. Ask her if it's Ebola.
That'll put her mind at rest.
It really was a bit of a flashback. I mean, I share the view that I don't think it's going to be as nearly, I mean, not even close to what COVID did to us. But it did, for me, and I think for a lot of people, cause a flashback toward those early days, you know, around this time, if you remember in the year 2000, 6 years ago, where we were all quarantined, we weren't even wearing masks in public, and we weren't even going out.
And we were all worried about whether we were going to run out of toilet paper. And I mean,
did you really consider that possibility when with this virus, Eric?
It just caused me to flash back to it. Just have that. I just don't want to go through that again.
When you flash back, Eric, do you think that in retrospect now we got a lot wrong? That despite our best efforts, the governor, the mayor, the president is becoming more and more right, and the governor and the mayor are becoming more and more wrong as time goes on about how we handled COVID-19. I'm not saying drink aquarium. I'm not saying drink aquarium water. I'm saying that the schools could have and should have opened sooner, and we didn't need to lock down as much as we did, and we treated financial hardship as though that's irrelevant compared to public health safety, when in fact we could have had both. We could have had a more robust economy. We wouldn't have had to send everybody checks, and we would not have damaged the health of the community at large so much. We didn't know that at the time, but that is becoming more and more apparent to me in retrospect.
Yeah, we didn't know that, although I do believe that most of the states that did harder lockdowns had fewer per capita death rates than states that didn't. I don't know how significant that was. I haven't studied up on this topic in a while, but we were flying blind. There's no question about it, and there was an excess of caution. I think we can conclude that at the time. But the risks of being wrong about that, of saying, well, let's open the schools and then the kids pass it to the teachers and the kids pass it to their grandparents and you have way, way more people dying, it seemed like a real possibility. And we didn't want to take that chance. And I don't know if you can look back and say, well, the reason that you say Trump more and more was right about some things, I mean, we don't have to drink bleach or take horse paste or whatever it is he wanted us to do, but the idea that we were not necessarily having to isolate the way we did and keep children home as long as we did, I mean, those things are right. But I don't. If he was right, he was not right for the right reasons. That he knew more about public health than Dr. Fauci,
right,
or any of the people who were doing their best. I think. I mean, this idea of blaming Fauci. Yeah, did he get stuff wrong? He got stuff wrong about masks. He got stuff wrong about a lot of things. But he's a public health expert, and he was doing the best that he could. I think that to assign wisdom to people who were saying one thing and assign malign intent to people who said another is really unfair, given what it was like back
then. I want
then.
Kate to sound off on this, but I think the people who were right for the wrong reasons, and the people who were wrong for the right reasons.
I'm not sure that there's such a perfect division in there, although I'm sure you can say that generally to some degree, for sure. But I think they did know pretty early on that people could certainly be outside without spreading it. I feel pretty strongly that our parks and lakefront should not have been locked down, and that Lori Lightfoot really had no reason to do that at the time, other than to knuckle under to the people who were really, really going overboard. There was no proof at that time whatsoever that people being outside would spread it to each other. In fact, the one thing that we knew was that people were isolated and really kind of creating a lot of mental health problems there. And the best thing they could do was, in fact, to get outside and get some fresh air. And literally, you could not go to the lakefront. It was hard to even get into Jackson Park for a while. So things like that were ridiculous. Sweden had only voluntary guidelines almost immediately, and they had a slightly higher death rate to start with, and then immediately they were basically fine, and they ended up doing better than the entire rest of Europe. Now, that all those numbers didn't come in for a while, but people could see very quickly that Sweden was not just all dropping dead like flies. In addition, Europe reopened their schools pretty quickly for a few months to end the school year. That year, I tend to get mixed up as to which year we're talking about when the COVID lockdowns first started. I think 2020?
It was 2020.
2019?
It started in 2020. It was March of 2020.
But they reopened their schools for a couple of months there at the end of the year to see how it would go. And it went fine. No trouble whatsoever. So they reopened the following year. But in the U.S., we pretended that didn't happen. And we just kept shutting down.
The only thing I want to add is
some for an entire year after Europe had already shown that there was no problem with the kids going back to school. So I've got to say there were many instances where there was absolute evidence that we were locking down way harder than we needed to. And there was just no willingness to say, okay, we were a little too hard, let's scale it back. And I don't understand why there was that stubbornness, that reluctance to just admit, okay.
Well, the longer it went on, the more political it got. The longer it went on, and then it became hard. And then it wasn't just about medical; it was political. Steve, I'm sorry, you were going to say something.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Kate. The only thing I was going to say is when we were saying Fauci got it wrong or Fauci got it right, he wasn't the only person making this decision or the only voice in that decision or that policy, right? I mean, there were the scientists that he was surrounded with. There was the CDC and others coming up with this. I don't think he was, you know, issuing these edicts on his own, right? I mean, of course they got many things wrong. And Kate, that you make I didn't know those numbers about Sweden. That's fascinating. But it wasn't just Fauci. Fauci had a team with him. And I mean, it's not like he was doing it on his own. I'm not making that speaking very well here. Well, can I take you back to the impressionist?
He was making his own pronouncements, though. He was the face of it.
I agree.
You know,
it is a little top down.
He did at first tell people not to wear masks, and then later came back and said, "Yeah, I just said that because I didn't want you guys taking all the masks. Now wear masks." So he admitted that he purposely misled the public. Then he claimed that the masks were absolutely necessary and everybody had to wear them.
Wait, hold on.
That was wrong. Certainly, when he did that, I think he did that because he was afraid that there weren't that many masks and there was going to be a run on them that was going to affect actual frontline healthcare workers. I mean, it's just never right to lie to the public, and you know, you can blame him for that. But there was.
I just don't think you can expect people to have complete trust in the public health administration when they admit that they will say things just to mislead you. It's not good.
Yeah, of course, that's not hardly uncommon in American politics. One thing that I'm now remembering was how we reacted. When I say we, I mean just I have to say perhaps the left is responsible for this, to the idea that there was a lab leak. That this was not caused by a bat hanging in a wet market in Wuhan, but was a leak from a lab there. And, you know, that's a plausible theory. And I haven't looked into how plausible it is right now. But there were people who were kicked off social media, who were canceled for bringing it up, for actually bringing up that this might be a possibility. Mm-hmm. And that was the kind of mindset that some people were in. And I got to say that particular mindset was more from the left than the right, of being able to say, hey, maybe it's a lab. And so what if, but they act like this was a racist thing to say, like, oh, you're being racist against the Chinese for suggesting that they this leaked out of the lab. That was insane. And there was a lot of insanity there. It was like I said, a confusing time. I think that politics played into it more than we wanted. Is there like the definitive book yet about the, I mean, it's been 6 years. Has anybody written?
Oh yeah. There's been a couple. I'll send you.
Well, there's one. I've got one that's really good.
I'd be interested in reading like a neutral, a brief against the Democrats or Republicans or Lori Lightfoot or Pritzker or anybody else, or Fauci, but I'd like to know what the passage of time has taught us about this. So we can, as we look forward, we can say, well, let's not make those mistakes again. Like I say, I haven't read that book, but I haven't been looking for it either.
The one I have at home is really good, and I'm Googling right now, book about COVID-19 that said the left got it wrong. I'm not sure I'm going to get the right book title. I will get you the book title for your Picayune Sentinel, Eric. It's really good. Well, it's not a political book. It's written by medical researchers.
That's what I'm looking for. You know, and there were a lot of people who wouldn't take the vaccine. They were saying that it was causing their bodies to become magnetic. genetic, and there's still people out there saying that more people were killed by the vaccine than were saved by it. And I don't believe that for a second.
Okay, let's leave Trump land and 2020 and come back to Chicago for just a minute. McDonald's is going to spend maybe $10 million a year until maybe 2040 for the naming rights to the new downtown Chicago Fire Soccer Stadium. I think that's money really well spent. McDonald's Park, or the Big Mac, as I hereby predict it will be called. Eric said that may be a dumb investment, though. I'm glad to see, A, $650 million private dollars going into downtown, and I think it's a perfect synergy with McDonald's, Eric. I think that's money well spent. What's your thought about that?
Well, I honor it's Mansueto, right? Who's building that? Joe Mansueto, who's building the stadium for the Fire, and that's great. He's doing it with his own on his own dime. That's terrific. And McDonald's is sponsoring it with their own money. It's their money. I don't understand why they would get a $10 million a year benefit out of that, given that their name is widely recognized and known. It's just a name. So they're not talking about their food is really good, or it's just simply branding. And I don't get why these arenas think, I mean, for instance, the United Center, is there anybody in the world who has ever said, I'm going to book a flight somewhere, but I'm going to, even though this flight on American is cheaper, I'm going to go with United because I go to games at the United Center.
I don't associate United Airlines with the United Center until I see an overhead shot.
It says the ubiquitous word United, opposed to McDonald's.
Or the All
right, I will speak for the marketing people here.
I know. I'm like, where's Marge when we need her? But I hear nominate Kate.
Okay. Yeah, I'm happy to step in for Marge here. I think that it's probably definitely a branding thing, because McDonald's is not cool anymore. Fast food that we associate with McDonald's, especially all the worst sins of fast food we associate with McDonald's, they really need to come back from just the taint of being a fast food place. And I think being associated with a new and upcoming sport like soccer is going to help them with that. But also, unlike the United Center, I think you're going to get a pretty good look at this Fire Stadium. I guess they're going to call it the McDonald's Stadium, or one of the other names you were riffing about earlier, John.
Yes.
I think people will get a pretty good look at that as they're coming into the city. As you're coming in on the Dan Ryan and you go up the ramp and hang a little bit of a left for it to go, you know, through downtown to the west of downtown, you're going to see it. I am pretty sure you are going to get a good look at it. It's going to be an iconic view as you come into Chicago. And I think we all are old enough to remember the old Magicus signs. We used to have one on all the three major expressways coming in, and they're all gone. We need something to replace the Magicus sign. And I think that it's going to say McDonald's someplace. You're going to see that.
Do you remember the Magicus sign?
No, I never. That was my route. I didn't take that route.
Two beautiful lips on it. And what were they?
Oh, yes, that does sound familiar, yeah.
Okay, so I've got one word for you. Gold, 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 golden arches.
Yeah, do you think they might incorporate that into the stadium design?
Gold, 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 gold. Arches.
You think they will put golden arches in?
Oh, you mean like goal? It's like
goal, like when they score a goal.
Golden arches.
Well, I understand why guaranteed rate. Yeah. Decided that they were going to sponsor, I guess they took over for U.S. Cellular One, whoever, was it Cellular Field before? It was Cellular Field before it was
I will not call it that, so I...
I know, well, I wouldn't either call it that. And it became Guaranteed Rate Field, now it's Rate Field, because I guess they changed their branding. I get why they would do that, because you want, when you're looking for a mortgage company and you see a name, you're thinking, is this a fly-by-night company?
Is
this a guy in a closet? And so they want to establish themselves as a solid member of the community. McDonald's has been around since the 50s. Everybody knows what McDonald's is. I don't understand why there's branding. The other thing that I don't understand is why the broadcast and print media feel like they have to participate in this branding, in this free advertising for guaranteed rate or rate. Like, why do you have to say at Rate Field, the Sox, you know, played the Angels the other day? Why don't they say, you know, at Sox Park, the Sox beat the Angels? It's like, why is it that we have to participate as in the media in this free advertising?
Okay, Steve,
Two things. When you're shopping for a loan and you want to find a lender who is responsible and a member of the community and makes good financial decisions, are you going to be drawn to someone who spends so much money on the White Sox?
Ouch.
And the
indeed.
The other thing that I really agree with you on, Eric, are the bowl games. You know, the bowl games now, there are no Rose Bowl or Peach Bowl or Orange Bowl. There's so many corporate names involved that you don't know. You know, we've really lost that tradition. And that's where I think the media doesn't necessarily have to go along, right? They could just be called the Rose Bowl. We don't need to give a commercial for whichever corporation is paying for that advertisement. We could call it the Peach Bowl. I mean, because I'm sure the word peach is in there somewhere.
So Coca-Cola shouldn't advertise, Chevrolet, Toyota shouldn't advertise.
No, they should advertise, but if they're going to advertise, they should pay the people who are doing the advertising for them. If WGN Radio is going to talk about the Coca-Cola Peach Bowl, you're not getting anything out of that. They are.
Yeah.
I think the media should stick with the Peach Bowl.
Well, back to Eric's point that he doesn't understand why they would spend the money on that anyway, since everybody knows McDonald's. But there's also Wendy's and Popeyes and other competitors out there, and you don't want to give up market share. You want to stay as top of mind as possible or brand yourself with something that's healthy. I think if anybody suffers, it would be the team, because McDonald's food isn't healthy and you're a sports team, but that's thinking about it way too hard. I think that it's good for McDonald's. It's good for the team. To be honest with you, I think McDonald's is such a well-known and beloved American brand that to stamp that on your new soccer team, when soccer isn't as popular as our other sports in America, you're borrowing some equity. Hey, McDonald's is all American. Come to this soccer stadium and watch the Chicago team play.
And it's a Chicago story, a Chicago company.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
I'm thrilled to hear about it, though, because this, we don't actually know the exact parameters of this deal, how much money is involved, but the articles did mention that another team was getting $100 million over like 10 years. So, yeah, it's a lot of money. And hopefully this means that Joe Mansueto is not going to pull a 1901 project and turn around and be like, oh, actually, now I need money. Now I can't do this stadium all by myself.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, you know, so far he hasn't done that. And hopefully he doesn't. He is going to be getting some TIF money. So hopefully this will help him not do that. I mean, the 1901 project, right? We all know they're on the way to getting $55 million of tax breaks out of us when they claimed it was going to be all private money.
This is the development around the place where the Bulls and Blackhawks play.
Yes, that place, the United Center. Yeah. So the Wirtzes and the Reinsdorfs were all, we could do this all by ourselves.
Yeah, but the amount of money they said they'd put up versus what they're asking for, I would still, if they came to me with that plan, I would think, you've been over to that neighborhood. You know how, I don't want to use the word blighted, but how much it would benefit from private investment. I would spend $50 million to get $1 billion out of them. No, am I doing it wrong?
That could easily.
Here's what I would say: they're promising to put in $500 million in this. They admit it's going to be seven phases to this project.
Yeah,
and this $55 million is just for the first phase, and nobody will say that they're not going to ask more for the other phases. And this phase is for the concert hall, the 6,000 seat concert hall, and their hotel. None of that housing, including the 20% affordable housing that will allegedly come in the later phases.
Well, so, but you talk about money well or not well spent. Like, is McDonald's smart to invest their money in a soccer stadium? I admired them. Frankly, I questioned them when they came out with this. I thought, are you guys sure you want to put $500 million there? Because I don't know that that's going to go. Just because you build it doesn't mean they will come. Eric, I'm sorry, you were about to say something.
Oh, no, I was actually going to circle back and point out that the guaranteed rate slash rate sponsorship started in 2016 and it ran for 13 years. It'll be really interesting to see if they find that it's still worth it and if they renew. It was for $2 million a year for a Major League Baseball team. Soccer is not as popular. It's a smaller stadium. I think if McDonald's is paying $10 million a year for that, they are overpaying.
Yeah. I borrowed that from an article somewhere, and they didn't know for sure. To me, McDonald's has got $10 million to spend, even badly. But yeah, I don't know what the exact number is, but you don't see it as such a smart investment. What about this, though? Gas prices in Chicago are now close to $5.25 a gallon. I wonder if you believe this. An internet search today showed various sources that said that out of every $5 per gallon we pay in Chicago, you buy a gallon of gas in Chicago, costs you $5. $1.28, about 26% of that goes to taxes. $3.72 goes to the supply chain, meaning the crude oil, the refining of it, the distribution to it, getting it to the retailer, and then the retailer. We found that at $5 a gallon, a gas station makes 0 to 5 cents per gallon sold, even as the price is going up. And in fact, since the state sales tax is calculated as a percentage of the cost, 6.25%, and the city tax is 1.25%, it is possible that today some gas stations are losing money per gallon rather than making money per gallon. They are normally at about a nickel, and now because the higher the price goes up as a percent, then they're charged more. They have to, the cost is higher. Some of the gas stations are actually negative. They're only making money on the snacks. I read that today.
It sounds possible. I know that the one of the things that I was interested in was this proposal that Donald Trump floated of eliminating the federal gas tax, which I think is only about 18 cents a gallon.
Yeah.
And then people are putting some pressure on J.B. Pritzker to eliminate the Illinois sales tax, which is at about 48 cents a gallon.
That's the big one.
And then there's sales taxes on top of that. And, you know, you can do that. They think this is going to provide some relief, some temporary relief, which is true. But these taxes do cover the road funds. Road building is what they're used for, so that if you suck those dry, you're essentially adding to the debt. Are adding to the financial woes that the state and the federal government have to do this. So it's not a free discount that you're offering people,
John,
which is a conundrum.
You're the math guy. I am certainly not. But
I think I may have got my math wrong, but go ahead, Steve. Ask me anything you want.
But it's hard to imagine they're losing money on the sales because if they have something to be taxed.
Right. A gallon of
gas. There's something on which there must be a positive figure there, right? If the figure was negative, they wouldn't have to pay that tax.
But it seemed to me like you're going to, I wonder who's paying that. Like, is the retailer paying it or the consumer's paying it? So whatever the consumer pays, does it really cost the retailer the money that I'm talking about? Let's focus on this point, that they're making 0 to 5 cents per gallon right now on a $5 gallon of gas.
And all right, I'm just confused by the concept that they're making less money.
I actually saw that too. I wish I had that article in front of me.
They're not losing money by charging the taxes. The taxes are just on top of the price of the gas. Are they purposely taking a smaller bite themselves in order not to raise their prices
so much? No, I don't think that's it. I think they're just passing it through.
Well, I recommend driving outside of Chicago to get your gas. It only takes us about 10 minutes to get to Indiana, and so we do that ourselves.
You purposely drive to Indiana to get cheaper gas. You drive to Indiana to get cheaper gas. I know you live on the south side.
I don't, but my husband will do that.
Really? Really?
Yeah, it's only 10 or 15 minutes if you're on the south side, southeast side.
Kate, it's Indiana.
Now, I think we all, that's a whole nother discussion, but I do think it would behoove us to stop being quite so insulting to our Indiana neighbors. Yeah. Another thing I would say about dropping the federal and the state taxes, I think that masks the problem of what's going on now, which just takes pressure off of Trump. But also, I don't see how we can afford it. You guys probably heard that we just recently, our national debt is now higher than our annual
GDP.
GDP, and that's really scary. We really can't afford to be lowering taxes in any way, shape, or form.
Well, it's not much relief anyway. It's 18 cents. So does $4.82 feel a lot different than $5 to you? And a lot of people in Chicago are paying, it's like 5 1/4 at some places.
One of the things about gas prices going up is that it has this multiplier effect on prices of everything. I mean, when you're talking about goods that have to be manufactured, you have to get the parts moved to the factory, then you have to move the finished good from the factory to the store, and all the employees are having to commute to the store, and so everything about it is inflationary. And I keep hearing people on Morning Joe and all these other shows talking about how, you know, even if we open the Strait of Hormuz tomorrow, it's going to take months and months for the price of gas to start coming down in any measurable way, because it's had such an impact, metastatic impact on our economy right now. And if it goes up, they're saying that it could go up to like $6 a gallon. And that makes it hard for people to get to work. It really cuts down on their ability then to buy consumer goods, right? Because they're spending all their money on gas. They don't have money to buy a new refrigerator or a new dryer or new clothes or things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, oh, the gas costs more money. It makes everything cost more money.
We have a button on our website at WGNradio.com. I think it's Chevrolet sponsors it. It's the Gas Buddy Think I think is the client or the site. But you can scroll around anywhere in the country and then zoom in on a block, and it'll tell you what the current gas price is on that block at that gas station. So if you're going to go to Indiana, you can at least click around and see where the cheapest gas station is and zero in on that. We then went over to California. It's about $6 a gallon in San Diego, and in the highest one I found was in Beverly Hills. Fair enough. But it was over $7 a gallon. And in the Los Angeles area, where they drive, it's more expensive than it is in Chicago. They must be calling their talk radio.
Has been higher taxes than we do.
Yeah, I mean, sure, I suspect it's that. And then there's different refining, like the summer blend in Chicago is a different grade because we passed a law than it is in other states. So we have to get a different kind of gas in the summer in Chicago, and that's more expensive. So I get that, too.
When is that going to go up, by the way? Have you checked on that?
Now
you're saying that. I remember the summer grade of gas. When does that kick in?
I don't know. I don't know. This is early May. You're thinking June's right around the corner, right?
If I had a radio show, this is what I would do.
you would get that information and put it on there. Okay, try and explain to me the Cook County tax delinquency case, which has made news this week. Can you give me the elevator speech, even if we go up several floors?
Yeah. I think I can. It is the craziest thing. But here in Illinois, since 1951, actually, it has been legal under Illinois law for a county, say Cook County, to in its process of trying to collect delinquent property taxes from mm-hmm. people.
Yeah.
Rather than simply allow somebody to buy the tax delinquency, when someone does buy that tax delinquency, the person who was behind on their taxes has 30 to 36 months, basically, to pay up those taxes along with any interest or fees. And if they don't, then the deed goes to the tax buyer. But when the tax buyer goes and sells your property, they get to keep all the money, all the equity you had in that piece of property. So if you just were behind, say, $10,000 on a $100,000 piece of property, you lose $90,000.
Can I ask a question about what happens?
Yes.
In that case, when somebody buys your tax burden, are they buying mm-hmm. it for pennies on the dollar, or are they paying the full amount because, you know, like with medical debt, they'll sell you the debt.
They have to pay the full amount.
Say it again?
They have to pay the full amount. They have to pay the full amount of the delinquent taxes, yeah. As well as the fees and penalties, I believe.
So the county's made whole. Right. Okay. Right.
So since 1951, the law has been written to allow for people to lose all their equity this way. And it's something that has been written about and raged about the entire time. The entire time. So now we're talking like, you know, 70 years. It's not a new thing. But for some reason, Cook County, our Cook County officials didn't get real interested in changing the law to preclude this or do anything about it until the U.S. Supreme Court in 2023 heard a case actually in Minnesota. In which they said, this is unconstitutional. You can't do this. At this point, my understanding is that Illinois is the last state that has not corrected this, that is still allowing counties to do this. And for instance, our treasurer, Maria Pappas, has been in office since 1998. Tony Preckwinkle has been president since, what, 2010, I think?
I think she's been president
and
forever.
It's only since this Supreme Court decision that they have gotten busy. Pappas specifically has gotten busy trying to get this fixed up in Springfield, which even then it's a little unclear because some people say Cook County, yeah, the Illinois law allows you to let the tax buyers do this and keep all that money. It doesn't require you to do it. There is some dispute about that. But in any case, the reason it comes up now is because Cook County just lost a lawsuit that was brought by one of the people who this happened to and turned into a bit of a class action suit. And that was actually filed in 2022, the year before the Supreme Court ruled on it. Still, you know, Cook County didn't move on it when someone brought it to their attention via a lawsuit. They waited until after the Supreme Court ruled on it. And now we have lost that suit. Cook County, when I say we, has lost that suit in the sense that the judge has said, yep, just like the Supreme Court said, it's unconstitutional. And guess what, Cook County? You owe those people their money back.
The county owes the people back.
Cook County is now going to have to pay back that money. Unless they appeal it and win.
How could they? Yeah.
Cook County's position was we shouldn't have to pay
Cook County,
back their equity.
Yeah, that's it. Well, Cook County didn't capture the equity. The
you
seller
are correct,
did.
The tax buyers
yeah.
were getting that money.
Who then sold
However,
that property. Yeah.
I'm sure the plaintiffs argued, and I would argue, obviously Cook County benefited because by letting the tax buyers do that, you obviously make it a very attractive thing to be a tax buyer. Buy up those delinquent properties, give us our property tax money that we're waiting for.
Yeah, right. They were using
that an attractive thing to do. You're not going to get your delinquent tax dollars back maybe as easily.
Can you explain this to me? Okay, so we say we have this $100,000 house. It's $10,000 in tax arrears. The tax buyer comes in and buys it for $50,000 or something like that?
No, he pays the $10,000 back to the county.
The tax buyer is taking the debt that you owe on the taxes off Cook County's back, off of your back, but they're also getting the deed to your property. They sell your property and they get all the profit from the property.
That's like stealing.
They pay $10,000 taxes and they get the property without paying any money
exactly.
at all.
Yes, oh that is correct. That when they sell
bizarre.
It, they get all the money that comes back from it. So
$100,000.
I guess I shouldn't say that correct. You necessarily lose $90,000 from a $100,000 piece of property. You probably didn't own it outright, right? If you did,
oh yeah,
own
whatever
it
the mortgage is, whatever the equity
90,
is, yeah, right. That's
so
a good point too.
Paid off the mortgage,
and that does happen to some people. That absolutely does happen to some people.
And I presume it's people that are in economic hardships to begin with, and probably don't have the resources to fight this thing. Yeah, Eric.
So. So the victims here go back 75 years, right?
Yes.
I mean, is everybody then included in that class? And how are they going to calculate that? And what is the total amount of damages that we're looking at?
I think it's 11 zillion.
Well, the lawsuit is on behalf of about 2,500 people. There is nothing to tell me if they are going to allow this to go further back in time. But from the calculations of, the average amount that people, lost equity-wise, the judge in the trial felt that Cook County would probably end up having to pay about $15 million a year to pay them off.
We're walking
another insane thing about this is that there's actually a fund there to pay people whose property got taken away from them, not because they didn't pay their taxes, but because Cook County made a mistake and said they didn't pay their taxes and completely illegally let someone take away their home and sell
wow.
it. Okay.
Wow.
There was a fund to pay those people back, but it was already insolvent in 2022. And in 2022, they already owed $22 million to people whose property had just been taken away from them.
Well, the real people who skate on this are the people who acquired the property, paid the taxes off, sold it, minus the mortgage, captured, say, $50,000 on the $100,000 house. And they're not going to go after them. They're the real thieves
Correct.
Here.
In fact, the tax buyer people have blocked the legislation in Springfield to definitely preclude this happening.
I'm sure they don't want to give the money back.
Their lobby is keeping it from going forward. There's a bill that's passed the House, has not gotten out of committee in the Senate because the lobby is too powerful.
So their argument
it's always
would
been
be,
this way, right? I'm
what?
Sorry, but I mean, I remember this 20, 30 years ago that if you don't pay your taxes, the government can sell your property for the old taxes. That's what we're talking about, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. I mean,
you like that? You think that's reasonable?
Well, that's another way to put it. They are sort of selling your property for the price of your taxes to the tax buyer who gets the deed for the price of your taxes. And then it's their property. They sell it and they recoup the entire, worth of the property.
And is their argument would be if you do that to us, then we lose the incentive to pay let's go back to your example, the $10,000 that you're owed, you're never going to get it because we're not going to invest in this if we're going to have to take that money and when we sell the property, give the proceeds
right.
to
the right. The then what's the incentive to buy the tax debt?
Right.
The zero.
And so then the government doesn't get
that the
tax
buyer people have declined to comment, but I believe that would be their position.
I'm sorry, Steve, what were you going to say?
Right, I mean, and then right, the government doesn't get its tax revenue. I mean, I feel as if we've moved from the impressionist part of the museum into the cubism exhibit.
Yeah, you're a little squishy on this, Steve. I understand the math, and there's a logic to all of this, but it sure does seem like that poor person who, but for $10,000, loses maybe $90,000 or X dollars in equity in the house that is rightfully theirs. They lose that. There needs to be a resolution to that, right, Steve?
I don't know. I mean, to me, this is like it's and I'm not the hard guy usually like, you had your student loan, you pay it back. But this has always been the deal. When you buy property, you owe the taxes on the property. And if you don't, this is the remedy for government to get their money. So I understand the hardship of it, but I don't know what's the suggested solution. I mean,
well, something right
sure.
off the bat.
OK.
I mean, obviously, if you haven't paid your taxes and interest and penalties have piled up, that amount should absolutely be taken off the amount of equity you had in the house.
Yeah, right.
Right?
But then you live there forever and you don't pay the taxes.
And they could simply come up with some extra, say, 10% off of the equity that the tax buyer will get to give them a little bit of a profit. Their profit doesn't have to be 100% of your equity in the house. Why can't it just be 5 or 10%?
Right.
Well, Kate, you were saying that we're the only state that does this anymore. There must be 49 other examples of how this is handled
exactly.
in a way that seems fair to everybody.
Yeah.
If only Austin were here, he always knows how
he probably would know the exact state that's doing it the best.
Yeah,
way.
But we wouldn't like what he says.
There are many ways
so
to do it.
Always that.
Better. Every possible way is better than the way we've been doing it. I just don't understand why both Maria Pappas and Tony Preckwinkle did not get started on caring about this until after a Supreme Court case.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a fascinating story.
I don't want to belabor. Can I just one more question, try it again? So, Kate, if I'm 75 and I owe $20,000 in back taxes and the government tells me, well, when you sell your property, we're going to reduce your equity by $20,000, I don't care. I'm about dead anyway, right? I mean, there's no incentive there for me to ever, and I don't mean if you're 75, you're about dead. I'm about 75. But there's no incentive to ever pay those taxes off because the loss of equity is not going to hurt you.
They're going to take your property. They're going to take your property if you have not paid your taxes. They're going to take it. The question is, what's your recompense going to be? Are you going to get zero even though the property was paid off? Or are you going to at least get most of your equity, get your equity back minus the taxes that you didn't pay, the penalties, the interest, and maybe some, 5% of your equity goes to the tax buyer.
Well, does the sheriff come to your house and throw your furniture on the lawn and change the locks? I mean, Steve's just imagining you're going to squat
there. They do. Yeah. There was a really horrific Sun Times deep dive into this, or maybe it was BZ or them together.
Same thing, yeah.
Where, they focused on several people and, this poor old woman. They just, show up one day, you're out of here. Do you have any guns? Good. No guns. Get your medicine. You're out.
Wow.
And she had 100% equity in the house, but she had fallen behind on her taxes when she fixed her roof instead of paying her taxes. And a couple years later, boom, she's out with nothing but her medicine in her hand.
There's got to be a remedy to this. Okay, we'll continue to follow this. I'm going to bring it up on the radio. We'll get more information about it, too. And then we're out of time today, but we're Austin here. He would also talk to us, we will next week, about the Chicago public schools are headed toward a teacher layoff and bigger classes. That was a headline. There's a $730 million shortfall. And so the CTU said, well, was it the CTU behind this or CPS that was saying?
CPS.
CPS said, I wonder how the CTU, I think I know how the CTU will feel about this. We'll have
they will be happy.
They never are. We'll have fewer teachers and larger class sizes. Okay, now that's it for this week. Let's close with a red light, yellow light, or a green light. Steve, you go first. What are you recommending?
My weekly podcast, Steve Bertrand on Books, is out today, and I'm talking to a former Chicago priest, Charles Schutt, who wrote a book called A True Story of a Catholic Priest, and then there's a long subtitle. But Charlie was a Northside kid, grew up, went to Mundelein into the parish, and he joined the Catholic Church became a priest during the Vatican II days with the open the window, let the fresh air in, and he ended up becoming disillusioned and leaving. It's a really interesting take on the Catholic Church right now, but it's also very frank. He's HIV positive. So he talks about what it's like to live as a priest, sometimes by yourself or other times with community, and the pressures on young men in joining the priesthood and living as a priest, the families that you always go over to have dinner with when you're a priest. It's a great Chicago story, and it's a thoughtful memoir, A True Story of Catholic Priest by Charles Schutt, Schutt. And you could find it at WGNradio.com or where you get your podcasts at Steve Bertrand on Books.
Like that. How about you, Eric? Anything you're liking or not liking this week?
Yeah, I've got another podcast that I like, besides Steve's, of course. It is one of the most recent episodes of Ezra Klein's podcast. He's a New York Times columnist. And the title of it is GLP-1s and the Wild West of Wellness. And he interviews health and science reporter Julia Belews, I think is how you say her name, about these weight loss drugs and how 1 in 8 Americans are now taking them. And I will be posting a link to the transcript of that as well as a link to that episode. But it's fascinating, this drug and what it's doing in this country. And it's got alleged side benefits for heart health and diabetes and so on. So it's a fascinating look from someone who studied this very carefully.
I just saw a commercial with Charles Barkley selling one of these drugs. And, you know, that's his pudge is his signature. So I just found that interesting.
Yeah, right.
You know, J.B. Pritzker said, I'm the governor of Illinois. I put the gov into we govy.
Yes. We've heard less about his presidential ambitions lately, it seems, but I don't think they've gone away. Kate, what are you recommending or not?
I would like to recommend, give a big green light to everybody to get a password manager. Most people I know really resist doing it.
But in this day, I'm
sure that we're each getting notices practically every day, right? Saying your password's been compromised,
yes,
and this or that data breach. If you've got a password manager, it's a program that basically comes up with a random password for you, and then it fills it in for you when you're on your computer and you get to that website. It fills it in for you so you don't have to go finding it. And then it will generate a new one for you nice and easy when you get a data breach. So I would highly recommend a password manager.
Which one do you use?
Which one?
I use 1Password, and I'm perfectly happy with it.
That's the name of it, O-N-E, Password?
And,
It's spelled O-N-E.
Password. It's just the number 1Password
is the app.
And if you've got an Apple, Safari has its own password manager. You can just use the Safari one.
Okay, I have a question about how these work. So what if I go on a different computer and it's changed my password to some random thing and now I want to get into my Walgreens account or my bank account?
Here's how 1Password works. 1Password has 1Password that you know, and that gets you into 1Password. And
What's
then yours? There's all your other ones.
Yeah, well now...
Yeah,
so
right.
when I go to John's house,
I'm never going to figure it out. Believe me.
So I would not that I'd steal yours, but if I was at your house and you said can I use your computer, I would have to sign on to 1Password, and then I could use his computer in my. But so then,
if
so then
you knew my 1Password password, but you don't.
But you could use it.
No,
this is for Steve's account. No, this is Steve's account. He could go to my computer.
Oh.
He goes to the website now. Steve knows his 1Password password, and that gets him in. Right. Right, Steve?
Okay, you're on your own computer, Steve, okay? You go to a website that requires a password.
Yeah.
1Password is going to pop up in a little window, and you're going to type in your 1Password password, and that 1Password is going to then automatically fill in both your email or username and your password into that website, and boom, you're in.
I don't mean to laugh, but this sounds so much like Brian Gumbel and Katie Couric talking about internet.
What is internet?
What is internet?
GE at.
Yeah.
Here's my green light for this week. I've been just randomly finding myself in some of these little dive bars in some of these little small towns out by where we have a house in Ottawa, like Peru or Marseilles or LaSalle or Seneca. And one of them is called Rudy's Liquor Store in Peru, and they have attached to it a speakeasy that they've built, and it's got some old-timey stuff and free popcorn and a jukebox, and they put quarters on top of the jukebox so you don't have to pay. They have a great selection of bourbons there. When I was there, there was a couple guys at the bar having a flight of Pappy Van Winkles, for crying out loud. They make good drinks. It's the ladies that were working there at the time were super nice, and they have a great big framed like newspaper ad from the Tribune or whatever it was 80 years ago when WGN's McCormick, who was the old broadcaster from the radio station, Steve?
Colonel McCormick?
Was it Franklin McCormick?
Franklin McCormick, yeah.
Oh, Franklin McCormick, yeah. Sure, yeah.
He came there for their grand opening years ago, and they still have that on the wall. So little synergy for me.
God.
But it was like I'm sitting here in Peru, Illinois, and it was a nice find. And there are other places like that, the Illini and Marseilles, in other words. But anyway.
When Steve Bertrand said he took a tour group to Peru, is that what he was talking about?
Right. We couldn't get into LaSalle. So Kate's bright light was to help us with our passwords. Eric's was, of course, to help us with our Ozempic. Mine was the story of a fallen priest. And you're drinking free tonight.
That's not true. I paid full freight. I believe you get a cocktail there for like $9. So all the more reason to make the trip. And that wraps it up for this week. Thank you, Kate, Eric, and Steve. We're produced this week by Neil Fisher and Ben Anderson. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
That was fun. That was fun.
Thanks, you guys. I love being part of this.
We've got to get one of those password things.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.